Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but it can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Well, hello to you. And first things first, I've been doing the podcast now for, what is it, 3 years, 4 years? 4 years. Oh my gosh, it's been 4 years. And I still haven't updated the intro. It's the same intro I recorded back in 2020 when, yes, my children were aged between 16 months and 16 or whatever, as I say. It's not true anymore. They're now aged between 5 and nearly 20. So, sorry about that. I keep meaning to record a new one. You'd think these things would be simple, but it is simple. It's just, you know what it's like. Other things shift the little brain cells around. And I think it's probably, you know, just to paint a picture. There's lots of different podcasts out there, and they have different ways of doing things. And some of them are very slick and shiny, and they have production companies and people working on it and different, you know, filming things. And mine is, I record it, I book the guests. My long-term friend, Claire Jones, who I've known since I was a teenager, she's a brilliant radio producer. So she produces podcasts with me. She's often with me when I record, and she'll do beautiful edit notes. And then she sends those to Richard, my husband, who edits it, sticks this bit on the front, sticks the other bit I do on the end. And then another friend of mine called Ella May does the artwork. And that is the sole production company. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, I know it's an old intro. Yes, if it was a really shiny, slick podcast, I would have been pulled up about that ages ago. But I suppose the person holding the rowing oars in the little podcast boat is, well, it's kind of me and then Claire, Richard and Ella May. So I guess that's why the buck stops with me, but also, sorry, it's a lot more slick. But you don't really need a slick intro. You want good conversations. That's why you're here. So my children, just for an update, are 5, 8, very nearly 12, 15, and very nearly 20. Sunny and Ray will both have their birthdays this month, as will I. As will Richard. Actually, it's Richard's birthday. I am speaking to you on April the 6th, and I am not in London. I'm not home. I've had a lovely week on holiday. It's the Easter holidays. Last weekend, we played a festival in the Netherlands. We scooped all the kids up. We put them on the tour bus. They came to that festival. Then we had a great day off in Amsterdam with the family. And then we flew to Puglia in the south of Italy, where we've been since Monday. And we fly home on the day that this is published. So Monday, we're back in Blighty. But, oh, it's been so nice. Can you hear the sound of the children? They're playing in another room. I've shut them in there. Anyway, it's a beautiful, beautiful day. It's the morning. Richard's opened his presents. And this is probably about as quiet as it's going to get. And we are back for another series. How lovely is that? I'm so excited. Another fine group of guests for you. Kicking off with Natasha Bedingfield. So Natasha and I have known each other for a long time. I think it's probably been, we probably met about 20 years ago when her first album was coming out and my first album was coming out. We've got lots and lots of crossover, lots of people we, lots of mutual friends, lots of people we both work with. And she's just a real positive, smiley, lovely presence. And last year we got back in touch after a little break where she was coming over to London to perform Mighty Hoopla and a few other bits and bobs. And she wanted to know if I had any suggestions for childcare. So I helped her find some people to look after her little boy while she was in London. She's got a little boy who is, I'm going to say, 6. And so we were sort of texting back and forth. And then over Christmas and New Year, for both of us, we experienced this simultaneous renaissance of old songs. So her song Unwritten, which is one of those songs that never really went away completely. I mean, I remember the kids singing it in assembly a few years back. Last year at Mighty Hoopla, Natasha sang Unwritten in front of a tens of thousands strong crowd who all sang the song just incredibly, like this huge audience singing the song. So, you know, the wind was in the right direction for it to really properly rechart and everything. But it's featured in a film, a rom-com, and the song started to take off again, meaning that Natasha, very similar to me with Murder, was suddenly out again talking about this song, talking about, you know, when it was written and the video and all the things that kind of about its birth. And we were texting back and forth because both of us were finding it such an extraordinary thing. And lots of fun, but also sometimes a bit, the roller coaster's going a bit fast. Anyway, it turned out she was in London for a little bit in between some jobs that I was doing. So we sat down together and just had a really lovely conversation. So we're now in April, as you know, but this was recorded late January, early February, when we were really still very much in the eye of the storm in terms of the songs, both, you know, doing stuff at in the charts and being flown here, there and everywhere for work. So yeah, there's that kind of buzzy excitement. And we spoke about lots of things. It's the first time we've really sat down and had a proper chat in a long time, but also, you know, often with other musician friends of mine, you're kind of a little bit ships in the night. So you might see each other out and about somewhere and have a quick chat, but being able to actually sit down and have a proper long chat and hear about her childhood and her songwriting and what music means to her, and obviously what motherhood means, was really delightful. So yeah, this is a really fun chat. And after we finished our conversation, we also recorded a really silly TikTok where we both sang a bit of each other's songs. And it made us laugh a lot. So that's the most important thing. Anyway, I'm going to sit and listen back and I will see you on the other side. But welcome to another series of Spinning Plates. Woohoo! Well, it's so nice to see you, Natasha. How are you?
So good, thank you. All the better for being in a lovely, cozy home.
Well, yeah. Basically, I feel like I booked you in to come on the podcast so I can kind of have an excuse to catch up.
I have to say that's why I booked this in too.
We've ring-fenced time to have a conversation. But how have you been finding it? So you've been over in the UK for the last week, is it?
Just for a week, yeah. I live in New York, Westchester, New York, and this has been so crazy, like a start to the new year. And I'm letting myself be more excited and more like just enjoying it and seeing it as fun. But I've also been very happy to see the success that your song is keeping on having and like just the way it's still resonating. Because I think right that's what all it is it's in a TV show it's in a movie, but then it just resonates just as much as it did when it first came out.
Well, and it's just so funny to me because I think, you know, you and I've kept in touch over the years, and last year we were talking quite a lot, like around summertime.
Yes. I was asking for your advice.
Yeah, you're always happy to help with
very good
childcare questions.
Oh my gosh, you helped me out so much because I was in London and I had no no help. I had no childcare. And it's terrible. That jet lag with a kid is brutal because they're up till 12 at night. It's relentless.
Yes. You can't just say, come on, can you just get with, just try and like pretend it's a different time.
Yeah, because they don't adjust. You just have to wait.
No, exactly. It's actually really, firstly, I'm happy to help. But secondly, it's always nice when you sort of hear a little bit of behind the scenes, because obviously, firstly, I know very well what it's like to do our job and, you know, be raising a family. But secondly, I think when I started out, I didn't really get much time where I'd talk to other singers, actually.
Yeah, me
You're
too.
Often the only one in the room, aren't you?
Yeah. I think because they just keep you so busy that you just don't have time. But I don't know why. I look back too. I'm like, why didn't I make more friends at that time? And I think it was just, there were so many people in your face that you just, other singers. Also, you're in different locations.
And it's not wildly encouraged, but also I think when things are starting to take off and accelerate, it's like sort of cladding being put on. So you have, your team developing and the people that become your touchstone good people to see all the time, and then people where you're like, they become the new people that are familiar to you, you're the people working your album and all this stuff. And and then when you haven't got time doing that, you want to spend time with your family and friends that you already had. Thank you very much. It's not really the time to make
And when
new
you're
friends.
On stage, like your mother, and you're on stage, you want to still look effortless. Like you still want,
so true.
You don't want, like you want to go on stage and you still want it to feel, you want it still feel the same standard and great. But like, so there's still that kind of feeling of, and being a performer, like larger than life, but that, then you go back home and your kid is up till 12 and, that kind of thing.
I know, life, reality comes crashing in.
Yeah.
I think as well, it's funny to me that I think if you'd said to us last summer that we would be sitting here now and both of us be in such a similar boat with our song, Old Friends, songs that are old friends, but having, whatever it is that's happened, a resurgence, don't call it a comeback.
Don't you dare call it a comeback.
Yeah, one of my favourite questions to be asked is either like, welcome back, or where have you been?
Where have you been? I'm like, I've been here.
I've known where I've been the entire time.
I know, I think it's just the algorithm, right? I think that I'm just not on your radar.
Exactly.
That's okay.
And if I'm not on your radar, it doesn't mean I cease to exist.
Exactly.
It's like a philosophical thing. I'm only really there if I'm right in front of you and you're listening to me.
Yeah. It's like you pause. It's kind of a bit narcissist. Like you just, like life pauses when you're not in the room or something.
So true. Yeah. I actually had an interview the other day where they said, and so this is how your kids are discovering Murder on Dance Floor. I'm like, no,
weird.
They've literally heard me singing around the place since they were born.
I was on an interview yesterday and the guy was like, are you thrilled? And I was like, I feel very happy about this, but are you thrilled? And he really wanted me to say I was thrilled. And I don't know why I was like determined not to say.
But I didn't want to
say I was thrilled.
Like, no,
you're not getting that.
He
really wanted that. I don't know what that is in me, but I didn't want to.
No, I'm totally
I don't
want to
be too excited. I'm not that excited. I mean, I am.
No, you were fine, thank
but,
you.
Like
Everything
I was fine already.
Over.
Yeah.
I get it. There was actually a question I got at the, is this good revenge for all the 20 years when we didn't hear from you? I was like,
wow.
That's very much not my interpretation.
Is that them trying to do a pun on Murder on the Dance Floor, like revenge?
Oh, maybe.
Like,
if I give them that, though, I think I'm giving them something that wasn't intended.
You can tell when a journalist's trying to get something, can't you?
Definitely.
The other one that I think a lot of people who have kids get is, how did being a mum change you as an artist? And that same journalist kept asking me that. Again and again,
right?
In different ways. Like, how did it change?
Were you open to giving them anything on that?
Well, I mean, having kids changes you so much, doesn't it?
Definitely did me. It kind of knocked me for six, actually. I think.
Yeah.
When I had my first, I didn't really. I felt like I had to find my way back to who I was a little bit.
That's a really good way of describing it. It takes a long time, doesn't it?
I think, particularly if you want to make sure that that part of you that feels the way you do on stage is sort of somehow still able to be in amongst the fact you're now responsible for someone else and, very happily in that role, but you just don't know how you're going to feel about being uninhibited when you're suddenly, I don't know, needed in a different way, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like I've always kind of been a bit of a Cinderella, where if I'm in a family environment, then I'm the one scrubbing the floors.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but when I'm on stage, it's like such a huge difference. Like I'm shining and it's like, and then I love my kids so much and I love my family that I just want to give it all up for them. But then when I'm on stage, I'm definitely supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely always that kind of, I'm trying to figure out how to straddle those two worlds.
But did you ever So your little person is six now, is that right?
Yeah.
But did you ever even consider that there'd be an alternative where you weren't doing what you do anymore?
Well, I mean, I think that the bond, I wasn't expecting the bond between my child and me to be so strong. You know, like I remember people talking about it and being just not understanding, even though I love kids, I didn't understand how it's really physically in your body, like the way your kid feels is like it affects you. So being away from them hurts.
Yes.
So it kind of ruins, all you want to do is go on a girl trip with your girlfriends and like have, but then it's like, your kid needs you. I wasn't prepared for that.
I don't think anyone can quite warn you that feeling, that sort of cord between you, really.
But then I think every mum feels that way, that we need those moments to shine and just to kind of let go. And, I guess for me, like I wouldn't have got that if it wasn't for that fact that it's work, like quote unquote, like for me, like it's easier to go when it's work taking me there.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Giving yourself permission to have the time that's not work can be quite hard, actually.
So, and a lot of working mums will feel that way, probably. But like when I'm working, and then as soon as I'm home, I'm back, kind of almost making up for being away. So this year I'm trying to be, like I'm trying to tell him, oh, I have to go and relax. Like your mum needs to relax sometimes so that he understands that it's not just work that takes me away.
You know what, though? I think that's a really good lesson, because I think sometimes we can want of a better word, slightly martyr yourself to things.
Yes.
Like always being where you're needed, but not necessarily where you've chosen, when you choose yourself for those spaces.
And how, and just to change the language to be like, even when you say no to things, it's like, I'm choosing not to prioritize that, you know, but it's kind of like, that's kind of like a good adjustment, I think.
And do you think it affected your voice having a baby?
It actually really did make it better. For me.
Yeah, I think for me as well.
I got
more range, weirdly.
Me too.
Isn't that strange? Higher notes.
Yes.
Which I've heard is quite unusual, but I was like, this is cool.
Yeah, I'm so high now. Yeah. And I know right after having a baby, my voice was a lot lower as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Most people tend to think it's the other way, that you get more like richer, deeper notes. But I found as well, it was the higher thing. I was like, this
it was
is
shocking.
Cool. Yeah. Like, that used to be quite hard for me, but now that's a little bit easier. That's nice. I really like that. And I think for my head, those bits where, as you say, when you go on stage and you go from, what was your analogy, scrubbing the floors, the sort of, you know, the things that you, the role you put yourself in, having that space where you can just be on stage and just be completely in the moment.
It's amazing.
That's very special, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's not something everybody gets from what they do, I don't think.
And also self-love. I think through loving a kid that much, it has helped me love myself a bit more in terms of, you know, like as a woman, the way that we feel, like the way that we look is so, like it's about makeup. But I've realized through like looking really into someone's eyes, like, or someone really loving me like that, even in the middle of the night, and you know, that's also been quite powerful.
Yeah, that's actually really true.
Yeah.
I suppose there's such a purity in the way that they see you.
Exactly, yeah.
That makes it hard to sort of back, you know, accepting it and giving it back. They sort of reflect it onto each other, don't you? Which is a nice feeling that you get with your kid. And I think, it does make you feel differently about yourself. Definitely did me as well. I'm a lot more forgiving about my parents and that kind of thing, because it's just not as important. And I don't feel the same way about my body or myself.
And it's weird because your body changes so much. So it's not even the ideal, it's not my own ideal body at this point, but but then there's like, you have to be grateful that it's been strong and healthy, and they're just like different priorities, isn't it?
And am I right that when you were pregnant, you were actually touring?
I had a horrible pregnancy, but I think there's something called prenatal depression.
Okay.
I think I had that, or it was just so horrible to tour while pregnant.
Well, I think if you felt completely blue and disconnected from yourself, I think that would make anyone feel depressed.
Yeah, I was so sick. I was so nauseous, and I was on tour with Train. I was opening for Train, and I was just so car sick on the bus. You drive, you get off the stage, go on the bus, drive to the next place, and it just didn't work. So my husband was at home in. I think in LA, and I was like, I need you out here. And he's like, you're doing great, because all the pictures, you know, like when you're pregnant, you look so great.
Well, if you're lucky. That's nice.
Oh, well, some people look, have the, what's that called? The glow?
Yeah.
The glow. I did glow, but I didn't feel the glow.
No. So do you think you had hypergravarium? Is that what it's called?
Maybe a mild form, because I wasn't like fully, I was just nauseous the whole time. Yeah. But I was a vegetarian and I stopped being a vegetarian and it kind of helped.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have to go with your instinct, don't you?
I probably will become a vegetarian again, but.
There's no judgment from me. I am a meat eater.
I just, my body was just like, I need to have that.
I can't believe you ate meat when you're pregnant. I don't feel like that.
No, because I actually want to be, but it was like this moment of, I can't, like my own ideals, I can't let that get in the way of having a healthy kid.
Yeah. And that's immediate, isn't it? That desire to put that first.
Yeah.
But I think that must have been a very lonely place you were in if you're on this tour and you're not feeling good in yourself and you're feeling sick.
Yeah.
And I mean, unless I'm misinterpreting, feeling, as you say, that prenatal depression is more than just, you know, an understandable response to feeling ill all the time. Is this something a bit deeper, more hormonal, more in yourself?
Well, that was the first time I understood how hormones can make someone feel depressed. And it's a very powerful hormone that I think probably, like, you know, women on, like, probably having... What, you know, like when you're a woman who is working in the kind of jobs that we do, we have quite a lot of adrenaline and we probably have a bit of a testosterone, a bit like, so that female hormone that comes in when you're pregnant is probably quite like, it's a bit of a shock to the system.
That's
probably.
True.
Yeah.
And is this something you've subsequently managed to find other people who've had a similar experience?
Well, as soon as I had the baby, I felt better. But I you know, when I hear of some of my friends who have the, I can't pronounce it, but when they have the throwing up thing.
Yes.
The morning sickness. Yeah, I'm always just like, I'm so sorry, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very intense thing, isn't it? And it's hard as well to get any sort of respite from the days that stretch before you to get to the point where you can actually feel better again.
I think it's why I've only had one, one and done.
I actually have heard of quite a few people who found pregnancy just, well, actually, to be perfectly honest, I was in that club very much myself with the first baby. I thought I was going to love being pregnant. I thought I was going to rock it. And I was just like, oh no, I'm terrible at it.
Yeah.
Didn't feel good. Didn't want to see anyone. Just felt a sort of grey version of myself, I think, for that time.
But that was how many years ago?
Very long time ago now.
I was shocked because I've known you all this time and I didn't know you had that many kids. Like, because you just have such a grace and such...
Kind.
Yeah, you've managed to like be like everything I've seen, always just be like a really keep your independent self and not be only about your kids. Because that's the one thing I remember, like before I had kids, it was like seeing people who had kids and they only talked about their kids the whole time, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is important to keep that sense of self, which I feel like you have.
Yeah, and also you don't know how you're going to feel about it, do you? You really don't. Yeah. And I think you get this sort of instinct. And I think there's so much about parenthood and being responsible for a child that's really uniting. And then there's all this really bespoke stuff that comes out. And I think sometimes the things you think you're going to feel, you end up feeling the opposite.
Yeah.
But do you think you always thought motherhood would be something you'd do at some point?
I actually was like I was like, I'm too young to do that, like, for a long time. like, I was married for 13 years before I had a kid, before we had a kid. And it was interesting. I had some healing. I had some kind of body healing, body work.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like people are starting to do, you know, therapy where it's like your emotions are kind of in your muscles. Like, you know, so sometimes when people are working chiropractors and like you end up actually going to some deeper stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had some work like that. I was doing yoga and I just had some inner healing and suddenly I was ready.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
so cool. This is about sort of unlocking things. I suppose it's to do with what you carry in yourself.
Yeah. Because I was the second mother to my youngest brother I was nearly eight when he was born. And I just grew up feeling like a mum. So I felt like I'm not ready to be a mum again. Like, and I think when I healed that piece, then I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Well, yeah, because before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about bigger families because you're one of four.
Yeah.
So you in the running order, you're the second one down.
Yeah, and you know, second oldest daughter is always really the oldest.
Okay. Oh, is that how it works?
And yes, at least in our family.
Well, no, yeah. I only have boys, so I don't. Okay, we don't have that.
Because girls mature faster than boys, so yeah. My parents will put me in charge of my older brother and everyone, yeah.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, so you definitely had that hat. And yeah. I think you were saying that, because we were talking about characteristics that come out of kids when they are automatically part of this little community.
Yeah.
And I was saying, I think some things you get amplified and some things get turned down depending on what other, you know, characters you've got to rub against.
Yes.
And there's obviously a lot of things that come out of big families I think could be great, but there's also other things we think, golly, you know, it's often like happy memories, but they're going through it at the time from what I understand.
I mean, sometimes very mature, some kids come out a bit more mature and then the parents are like, oh, they're so mature, let's give them more responsibility. But sometimes they get parentified a little young and that can have other, it can have great effects like being more responsible, and but it can also, there can be some healing that needs to be done from that, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting. You've really sort of given me cause to think about all of that, especially when you said how the sort of dynamics. I mean, look, everybody's affected by the family they grow up in, of course.
I like how you described it, that you said like filling the gaps or people choose.
Well, that's what I feel like with my kids, because I feel like they've sort of, it's almost like some of the kids will come along and be like, right, has anyone taken this characteristic yet? And I'll go, oh, no one's actually done that. And they'll go, great, that'll be the thing that I do then. And they'll sort of fill in the gaps of what hasn't gone before. And then if there's another character that's quite similar, you might diminish or amplify.
Yeah.
Just so that within the culture of the house, you feel like there's, you know, I suppose you're always trying to strike balance.
And then have enough air for everyone, like enough kind of breathing room. And yeah, everyone needs to have their thing. Yeah. So in my family, Daniel, he was like the most, he was like a Michael Jackson or, you know, like just one of those most talented kids that you see. You're just like, oh, you're ridiculously talented. So he already took that one. And like, even if you ask my dad, like the other day we asked my dad, can you describe like your four kids in two words? And he said, Daniel, ridiculously talented. And then he said, Natasha, she works really hard.
Okay, that's also not two words, but
thank you.
I mean, pedantic of me, but I guess that's interesting.
I can't tell if he was joking, but I think he wasn't. But
yeah. Well, I guess it's interesting, isn't it? Because I mean, look,
I do work hard.
You work really
hard.
I do. But also, I suppose this is a bit like, well, it's so hard to avoid the labels that can be put on what you're known for within your own family. But also it's interesting because, you know, again, before we were recording, you said it sort of entered into like a belief system about yourself.
Yes.
So you feel like, well, the singer's already taken. So when you did come to explore your musical talents and passion, did that make it hard for you to find it, to get on this, give yourself permission to be on stage and actually just go, oh, this is what I want to be doing?
I remember it just being this, I just couldn't, I was like, it was kind of this, I know this is your thing, but I can't not do it. I have to, like, it was this, it kind of became compulsive, like this thing that it just wanted to come out. And it was a way of expressing and a way of talking and a way of communicating that was really empowering. And, you know, I just remember that, like having a discussion and being like, sorry, like this isn't just your thing, you know? And it's funny because even my younger sister has it and our younger brother too. Like we all have that gift of songwriting and singing.
And, so the ridiculously talented going to Daniel first affects all of you.
Yeah. And you kind of have to just, it's just like anything, you have to go, well, that just, you know, and my parents think that I'm talented. They really do. They're very proud. So sometimes one little thing a parent will say to you will just stick with you, and they don't even believe that anymore.
Yes.
You know, but you've got to let it go.
Well, they don't even remember saying it.
They don't remember saying it.
We've probably done that to our kids already.
Probably.
Yeah.
I know.
We've said the thing they're going to bring up in 20 years.
Well, that's the thing. Like you have to know that your kids aren't going to like get away with not having therapy.
Yeah. Or just hope I mean, it's that poem, isn't it? They fuck you up, your mum and dad. They may not mean to, but they do. It's just the sort of like the things just come out and family dynamic. But out of it is also, you know, resilience, love, bonds, all the good stuff.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Were you born in the UK and then travelled to New Zealand?
Our parents come from New Zealand, and they immigrated to England just after Daniel was born, and then they had me in England. Yeah.
And did you stay here after that?
We stayed here.
You went back there?
Yeah. Like, we would go, like, we would travel there and visit our family there. And we would kind of, our accents would change, like, when we'd go there, because we wanted to be New Zealander so bad, because it's such an amazing country. So we'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, oh, that's so true. You know, like, hey, you know, we just try and fit in with our cousins and everything. You know, that New Zealand eats the most ice cream in the whole world. So we would just eat huge, like, you can go to these places.
Is that an actual fact or just your observation?
Well, it was, I don't know if it's changed to Iceland now, but it was a fact at some point.
I like it.
Yeah, they also have the most car crashes.
Okay.
Yeah, all these countries have these things.
Unrelated.
Yeah. Yeah, unrelated.
I don't think eating ice cream.
But there is an amazing ice cream place as you're driving somewhere, and there it's like five scoops all on top of each other. And then
they can't see the road.
Yeah, exactly. And they cover it with chocolate, and the chocolate gets hardened, and then you have to eat it so fast before it all rolls down your
hand. Wow.
Yeah.
They've taken it to the nth degree with the ice cream.
Everything in New Zealand is extreme, yeah. They do a lot of extreme sports and things.
I do remember it's a very, very beautiful place. I haven't been for a long time, but I do remember its colours, like extraordinary colours. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So what elements of your childhood do you think are similar for your son? Are there many things you think have married up, or is it quite a different childhood?
That's a really good question. I haven't thought about it. Well, he's an only child, so that's very different.
Mm.
Hopefully not a lonely one.
No.
No,
there's loads of benefits
to
being an only child.
He's, I don't know, like, and he goes, like, you know when people go, which part of you did he get? I don't know. I think it's probably quite different because my mom wasn't a singer. He's been very good and very flexible. And I think because of how he is, we were able to do quite a lot of amazing things, like bring him with us. He's been quite easy to travel with.
Yeah. I think as well, if you have one child, that becomes a lot easier because me, I can't really travel with the kids en masse because it adds in so many more logistics.
Yeah.
So having one means you get to actually bring them along for the adventure.
How many rows, like if you're on a plane, like do you take a whole row?
Usually a bit of that.
Six,
seven people. You have to organise who's sitting with who before you get on the plane. Otherwise, that becomes a thing. So there are kids where I'd be like, those two cannot sit next to each other.
And what about Christmas presents? Do you have to give them all like equal gifts?
They do notice about fairness. Yes. And Father Christmas, I'm told he like counts out to make sure that everybody gets the same number of things in their stockings.
Wow. Okay.
It's all got to be worked out. Kids are like very hot on what's fair. I'm sure in your family growing up, must have been. Yeah. You would notice, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that you had your brother when you were eight that you felt like you were parenting, because I had exactly the same thing with my little brother. And
really?
I think, yeah, I absolutely loved it, but it also completely changed everything for me having him around and just loving it.
What was he like when your songs became hits? Like, was he around for it?
Well, initially, he was obviously quite little. So I started singing when I was sort of 16, 17, and he would come along to gigs, but he was only really little then.
Wow.
But now he's the drummer in my band. So it's
no
quite
way!
Cute, actually. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So I now get
so
to
nice.
Travel with my little brother,
that's
which
amazing.
Is really cute.
That's so cute. I love that.
It's really wholesome, isn't
it's
it?
It's like the cause.
Exactly. And I was interested to look at your roots in songwriting and so much of it coming from the church, because I think that that's quite a specific remit in terms of how to write.
Oh, yeah.
Has that just, did that sort of define what came after writing in that way, like thinking about a congregation and also being able to write songs that are uplifting and happy? I think writing happy, uplifting songs is much harder.
It is hard.
Than writing songs that are... Yeah. You know, sad or sassy or anything like that.
Like, I write a lot more sad songs because I kind of have to get through the sad songs to the happy songs to come. It's kind of a journey in itself, like therapy.
So there's just a process to getting to that bit.
They're hard. Like, you're exactly right. They're hard. And you try to be clever. Like, it's more fun as a songwriter to try and be clever and have a double meaning and... it's hard to get past the ego as well. Like, I want to be... seen as cool or, you know, I want the musicians to admire me as well. But I think for me, like the more of the drive is I want, everybody to feel connected and to feel, like that they're understood or like I've expressed something that was hard to say. Like, that's the kind of thing that I kind of more like gravitate towards. And I think like the journey of like a song of like it just takes you from where you're feeling and maybe elevate like going through it. Yeah.
I really love what you're saying there, because I think that makes complete sense about that thing about everybody feeling like you've articulated something that's happening. I mean, isn't that just what music is so brilliant at, when you hear the right song at the right time and you're like, yes, oh my gosh, that song is speaking completely to me.
It's also what comedy is all about, right? And like hearing a comedian and they're talking about something very... very private, and you're like, that's not just me.
Yeah, you know? That's so true.
Yeah.
So how significant, because I think there is definitely a thread of musicians where they've taken that style of writing, the type of writing that does work in church, that does work in congregation, is about praise and harmony and all joining in.
Yes.
Is that one of those things that for you, you feel like if you understand that about you, you understand a lot about how you write, or is it more like... just what you, the process, you know, what happened to you and your story?
For me, it was a good, like a good training ground in a way of like, a way that music takes you somewhere else. I remember as a kid being really loving that part of being in church, and that the music, you travel somewhere and that you feel connected to people and you feel connected to a higher thing, to a concept like God or higher power, and it was very powerful. It was very uplifting, for sure. So I think probably, like, I mean, I feel like every time I'm in a crowd, there's that energy thing. Yeah,
definitely. No, it's interesting because I think I didn't start writing at all till I was in my 20s, and I sort of came at it a lot more kind of, I suppose, from like sort of bedroom, like in my thoughts, angsty teen sort of school of writing. So that's why I'm asking about, because I think already having that mindset for how to sort of just give yourself over to that, the beauty of everything joining together, is not necessarily how most people start writing when they're just in their bedrooms writing for themselves. It's kind of like a different set of, a different intention.
Maybe, but like people say write for one and then you write for everyone.
Oh, yes,
so
that's true.
Like, you're talking to one person and it just somehow that's the part. It's like the more personal it is. And you've probably been in those songwriting camps where, I have, where especially if you have a pop hit, then your label puts you with a lot of other pop writers and then everyone's trying to write a hit song. And when you're trying to write a hit song, there's like a it's not personal so much. It kind of feels like it's being clever or gimmicky, or like anyone could sing it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to storytell as well when you're writing with lots of people and it's all a bit like...
Storytell.
Yes, the objective here is to write a song that kind of works like this by the end of the day.
And isn't it hard to believe, like, when you tell a story that would... Like, that your story might... Like, your story of having a kid... having a brother who when you were eight, is similar to my story.
Yeah.
And who would have known that? Like,
because
in that moment, you feel quite alone.
It's like, true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when unique.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Do you think it's funny? Because now that we are both experiencing a new adventure with a song that we first did, were you 22 when Unwritten came out?
Yeah.
See, I was 22 when Murder came out.
Are you kidding?
No, it's so funny, isn't it?
That is weird.
Yeah, really weird.
Oh,
so
my gosh,
for me, it's like, it's like I've taken out a box file in my head.
Yeah.
It's got a bit dusty.
Yeah.
Not singing the song. You and I have both been singing those songs since then.
Yes.
Like millions of times. Yeah, exactly. But the box file of how I felt when I was in that stage of my career, which I hadn't really thought about for a long time.
Yeah.
And some of it was wild and wonderful, and some of it was like, it's like awkward remembering it.
Things have changed a lot since then. So there was like lot of sexism and like, so you kind of put that in a box,
mm-hmm.
and also don't notice it because it's how things were. So it's like, it's confusing, isn't it? When you start talking about it and you're like, huh, what?
Yeah. And I think also just feeling like you start off doing what you do and it's quite a personal thing. And then by the time you get to, you know, an album where it starts to take off, it becomes this committee of people making decisions and trying to hold on to who you are and what your intention is and what you're up to and having a nice time doing it, thank you.
Yeah.
It's quite hard just to hold on to that rudder, I think.
And sanity.
Yes, yeah. Sanity, yes. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, do you, when you look back on that first rush of everything with your first album, and actually I've just realised we've got more parallels because I think you worked with Sophie Muller, didn't you?
Yes.
For These Words.
You worked with Sophie Muller.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And that's where I met our makeup artist that you and I both share.
Yes. Lisa.
Lisa Lauder.
Yeah, who I still work with.
Who's the best makeup artist ever. Like,
and for people who don't, so Lisa is amazing hair and makeup and she actually is my third boy's godmother.
Wow.
And then Sophie Muller, video director extraordinaire, who's my fifth boy's godmother.
Wow. Okay.
So I still work with, so like the friendship and the relationship, as you know, they just run on for years, which is so nice.
Yeah.
But it's funny thinking back to that bit and just feeling, like that accelerate that happened with my career and traveling all over the place. And some of it was glorious and some of it I was like, oh my goodness, just feeling busy for busy's sake and also worrying about what's happening next and will I get a chance to make another album and how do I really feel and what, just needing everything to percolate a little bit so I could kind of make sense of things a bit.
And it all happens and then everyone wants you to explain why it happened and you're like, I don't know. Like, what makes me an expert? Like, it's just happening.
Yeah, like, yeah.
In a way.
And has your relationship with performing and music, do you think it's stayed fairly consistent in the middle of all of this?
I think it's, like you said, like life changes you, so you become better, like, you know, more experience, and then the experiences that you have make the songs make more sense, that kind of thing, more connected to it.
Mm. And looking at your timeline, it looks like you've been quite good at making sure you've got time where you can just songwrite and produce and get back to like the roots of what mattered to you.
Because I'm an introvert, so I have to really create time to think and to process it myself because I'm not an outward processor. So I don't actually ever process things out loud. Like, not, it's very hard to. Like, I have to kind of think about it first.
So how does your, because I think I'm quite a shy person too. So how does it manifest? Yeah. Do you feel like you've got, like when you're on stage, you can feel big and ready for that, but then you need to be able to, like, if you were out socially, are you good at like, work in a room and things, or are you kind of like, I'll just stay in one corner? And
I'm quite good at working a room. Like, I guess, like, when I'm working, then, like, I know how to, like, under the thing of work, I'm able to do superhuman things, but then I have to go home and kind of, then I'm quite sensory. So, like, I'm realizing this word sensory, but then I'm like sound, loud sounds kind of keep going in my head for a long time afterwards. So I have to go away and, like, just be quiet.
You need to decompress a little bit from things.
Yeah. Regulate. Yeah.
So actually, I think You've had to be quite clever with yourself to make sure that all your sensitivity and your needs are well met, actually, so that you don't end up losing bits of yourself that matter to what you could give into.
But that's why, like, I'm looking at your house right now and I'm really impressed, because I haven't done this where you've really, like, all over your house, just shown your personality through your house. Like, mine is much more in my creative work. Like,
okay.
I put it into that, but I'm not so, haven't been so visual. Like, I haven't put awards up, or, like, I don't know. But that also can just be the way people are, like, that you're more stylistic than I am, you know?
Yeah, I suppose it's all quirks of what makes you feel good. And for the record, if you can, I mean, there are no awards on show. I just want to make a clear.
No. I see these as your awards. This is your, to me, this is your, these are your.
The flammable,
like,
goods.
Yeah, this is your, like, things that you've collected.
Yeah, like lots of trinkets.
Like, really showing your personality.
That's interesting you say about awards. We have only got one in the room. It's an Ivor Novello, and it's Richard's. And it's,
I mean, I don't have many awards.
I don't have one of them.
I don't actually have a lot of
awards. Like, whatever. No, but I worked with someone yesterday, I was songwriting yesterday, and I went to their downstairs loo, and it was filled with awards.
I like when people put it in the loo, don't you?
I was like, I said to him afterwards, I was like, you're happy that I've been to the loo, because I've seen everything.
Isn't it?
I've
humble, seen all your awards. It's like a humble brag, isn't it? Like,
very much so.
It's kind of like virtue signalling.
They know I'm going to need a wee at some point.
Yeah. It's like, all my acknowledgements are shit, but I want you to see them.
But actually, I think you have to do what works for you. And I think, so is it, when you say home, are you thinking of your home in New York?
Yeah.
Is that where home is?
Yeah.
How long have you been in that place?
Well, I've only been there for a year.
Oh, it's new.
Yeah.
You can build up to this level of stuff.
Thank you.
Dream big. I could probably send you away with a suitcase to take home with you, to be honest. I've got a load of stuff behind that sofa waiting for the charity shop. You want it?
Okay.
Trinkets are us. Yeah.
Another way that we've linked up, you're going to ask a question. But there is another connection. Is that Danielle, who I wrote Unwritten with.
Oh, yes.
She was in a band with Greg Alexander, who you wrote Murder on the Dance Floor with,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. I know, so our songs are like cousins.
Yeah, and what's their song? It's called, his song is called Don't Give Up.
Yes.
Yeah.
You only get what you give.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. I was singing Rick Astley's song, is it Don't Give Up?
No, that's Never Gonna Give You Up. Don't
worry. Never Gonna Give You Up. Wait, you get what you give. Wait, that is Don't Give Up.
It says that.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
You got the music in you.
It's probably called You Got the Music in You.
Yeah.
Forgive us, Greg and Danielle, if you're listening. We do know what song you did, and we love it.
Yeah, we love it, and we love the songs you did with us too.
Did you end up working more with Danielle?
Yeah, I wrote another song with Danielle called Pocket Full of Sunshine.
Ah, yes.
Yeah,
so she's lovely.
She and I have got a good flow. Yeah.
And how did you find, so when you had your little boy, what was going on after you had him? Because you wrote with Linda Perry after that, is that right?
Yeah, so when I had a baby, I was like, keep working. Like, I just didn't want to, like, stop. So, like, I went and got a record deal. And it was amazing because she's a very strong female, and we wrote some really great stuff. And it was fun to have, like, my kid in the studio, like, have him in there and, you know, pumping breast milk in the other room, and then go back in there and write some melodies and...
Yeah, it feels quite wholesome in a way, doesn't it? Because you've got your new baby, and then you're feeling like, I can just...
Mother Earth.
Yeah, just write and sing and just sort of connect with that. And it's not the extrovert side of things. It's kind of quite squirrely and feels nice, doesn't it?
Yeah. You've done that.
I have. It feels really good. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And it felt very, like, safe, actually, cozy.
One of the things that people were asking me this week, because I've been in England all week, is like, please bring back... Like, when are you going to bring back new music? And that's the funny thing, is that I've been writing music this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because they want it to sound like the original stuff. But then if I release something that sounds exactly like the original stuff, then it's not going to be growing or new. So it's like hard to, it was a hard one to answer, because I've always been writing and I've released bits, even like during the pandemic, I put some things out. But just because they weren't hits doesn't mean I wouldn't release them, you know?
I know, but I think there's a weird thing that happens with anyone who's lucky enough to have song or songs that people know them for, there's always this sort of expectation that you're going to go and do that part too. And actually, like, people don't really want you to do that. So all you can really do is what works for you.
Because it'd be a bit gimmicky, like, well, let's do another Murder on the Dance Floor. Like, so now let's, what, the opposite of murder?
Unwritten on the dance floor.
Living.
Let's jam it now. There's a piano here.
Well, like maybe bring
we'll
it,
tick both
like
boxes.
Doing CPR. CPR on the dance floor. So you like rose someone to life.
Yeah. Yeah. Just everything. Just flip the words. Put it all into a thesaurus.
Yeah.
And put the chords in a different order.
Play it backwards.
Yeah. But people don't even really want that anyway. Yeah. But I think that the real beauty, if you're lucky enough, is surely to just be able to keep doing what you do, to keep being able to write, to keep being able to produce, keep being able to sing, keep doing your gigs.
That's what Brooke Shields, I had the opportunity to hang out with her. And she's just like, she said that was her secret. It's just to don't ever stop. Like just to, it doesn't matter. Like just doesn't matter. Like don't judge it. If it's like, don't compare the, what you're doing, but just keep doing what you do and do what you love.
Yeah. You know? I think momentum is the happy bedfellow of creativity.
I love that. Wow. That's an amazing quote. You need to like, we need to put that on the wall.
I was saying, the happy, because I think if you're a creative person, momentum is your friend. Energy is your friend.
Yeah.
When it goes quiet, that's when it's tricky to, because then you feel like you're pushing the boulder all by yourself. But when there's like a little bit where it kind of rolls by itself and then you're like, this is quite fun. Yeah. Then you feel good, I think.
I think that's like such a secret to creativity.
Yeah. I think that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I was looking through pictures on Instagram. First of all, your little boy is very beautiful. He's a very sweet little man. But I didn't realise that he was really quite ill for a little bit when he was... How old was he when he was in hospital?
Two.
Yeah,
nearly two.
So are you okay to talk about that? Because I thought that's a big thing you had to go with. And obviously, I think you were writing about it because you were saying we are now on from this big event.
Yeah, I shared about it at the time that it was happening. And it was so devastating in the moment. And I did that album and I went on tour and he came with us and it was amazing. And then like a week later, he suddenly had a seizure and he couldn't talk and he couldn't walk.
Oh,
and we went
that
to the hospital.
So frightening for
you. Yeah, he had a spontaneous brain abscess and they had to operate on him. And luckily, like it has a cure. It's something that happens. And we were there for 5 weeks.
5 weeks,
because we had to do two surgeries. And you know, like when something like that happens and you're just so grateful, I was just so grateful for the whole hospital system and like probably quite a good, like good in an emergency of just like holding it together. But, you know, then like my friend said to me the next time he gets a cold, you know, for the rest of his life, you're always going to worry. And I was like, please don't say that over me. Like, I don't want to become an anxious person from it. But we did have a moment like that. I was like, she's right. And we took him to hospital like a year later and we got some scans and they were like, he's 100% better. And it was so good to have that peace of mind. Like everything's fine. And sometimes things like that happen.
Yeah. And I think actually hospitals would rather, you know, turn you away with your little one being fine. They never say, why are you wasting our time?
Exactly.
They've never once done that to
me. It made me really trust and be grateful for like doctors and, you know, really.
Yeah. And I think it's like a little insight into the fact that, you know, there's this sort of whole, I suppose they must feel like a subculture of parents where they're with their child and the end of the road is not going to end up with them going home.
Yeah.
And you sort of glimpse, don't you, sort of behind the curtain of this other world,
which is a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people.
It's like that's, you're so good with words because that's totally what it is, and you just it forever changes you in that way that you can, you understand how fragile the balance is and how every single person has gone through something that's been devastating at some point in their life or is going through.
Absolutely.
And just how strong people are.
Yeah, and I think how things can just change on a dime as well. You get that thing of like, I mean, I'm sure I'm not alone, and sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and think, is this the day? Is this the day when everything changes? And you sort of have to kind of get yourself over that hurdle, don't you? Because it's not a very helpful way to think.
Well, sometimes even when great things happen, that can be a tendency to be like, oh, well, it can like only go down. Like, you know, you've got to stop yourself from thinking like that for sure. Like,
yeah, that's very true. But I am so glad that there was such a happy ending. But
thank you.
Because I think that when I was reading up about it, I saw that you had to go and do a gig in that time because you'd already committed to something. And I'm thinking,
I did.
That must have been one of the toughest
it really was.
Things to sort of be getting yourself ready and putting your makeup on and getting ready for a show. When
I remember this, I couldn't do small talk. Like, so I'd be at an event like that. My son was still in hospital and I would just blurt it. Like, everyone's making small talk and I'd be like, my son's in hospital, you know, and I'm trying to like, sorry to like, cause everyone wants to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't really hide it. I couldn't, it's interesting and sobering.
Yeah. But I think that's very normal. And I know that whenever I've been going through something, it's almost like that's how I don't know, get my sort of counseling from people really, is I just keep talking about it to people.
Yeah.
And most people look at you a bit like, ooh, a little bit of oversharing there. And every once in a while you'll get someone who'll say something like, oh, that happened to me, or that this experience, or something comforting.
Mm.
But I'm sort of looking for the bit where I just get a little cushion back at myself, really, because otherwise I'm just feeling a bit alone in the middle of it. I think things that are on your mind, they're just sort of there, aren't they? You can't push
and you
them
know when you're
back.
Going through things like that, you think people must be able to see. Like, it really is like that, Smokey Robinson song that goes, the tracks of my tears. Like, take a good look at my face. You'll see this smile looks out of place. But, like, if you look closer, it's easy to trace the tracks of my tears.
Yeah.
And you just think, can't you just see how broken I am? Like, can't you see it? This has destroyed me. And people don't see, they can't see it.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
And they don't, some people don't want to see it.
Yeah, well, I think it can be a bit of a, jarring juxtaposition if your job is usually associated with uplift.
Or entertainment. Yeah,
yes.
Uplift.
exactly.
My son is in hospital. While you're like tap dancing.
Exactly. Exactly. They don't always want to know. But also, you know, there's a part of our job that is being an entertainer and having to just sort of compartmentalize that, put that in a little box. Okay, off I go. Onto the show must go on kind of vibe. But I think that must have been really scary, and I'm just sorry you went through it. But I'm glad it's a thing that you can talk about in past tense.
Thank you, me too.
Yeah. So, what is up? What plans did you already have for this year before your song had this swirling around?
Is it the 20th anniversary of your songs too? Then or
something? I think probably. I'm a bit older than 44, so
I'm 42.
Yeah. So.
I think that I'm 32, but I'm 42. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So for me, it came out, well, it's 22 and a bit years ago now.
Wow.
There's a lot of twos in my experience of this.
Numerology, that would be cool.
In fact, fun fact, when Murder first came out, it went to number two in the charts because Daniel was number one.
That's amazing.
You know what, though?
That's
good song. Such a good song. Still sounds so good.
Okay, we've got to call him. That's funny. That's really funny. So he's 44.
Right.
Oh, I love that. And he's also been kind of, he also did press like a week ago in England. Like was going, he's got a show coming up.
Right.
So what I'm doing is I was thinking of celebrating the 20th anniversary this year. I think it'll be in September. So I was thinking of doing some fun shows and maybe putting some new music out or something. We'll see if I can get it together in time for that, but that would be good.
Yeah. I was interested as well to hear you. See, I know you write, but also production is something that you do as well.
Yeah, I love
it. I don't think every singer does that, actually, or songwriter does that.
Yeah, I really hear music a lot and I really love to kind of like, but I always co-write. I always co-write as well, so I always work with other people.
Is that because you just like having the energy of working with someone else?
Yeah. I love the energy. I love what it's like an experiment, a chemistry experiment, you know?
I also feel like I'm much better when I work with someone else because I sort of self-edit in a different way.
Yes.
If I'm on my own, I can't really tell the good ideas and the bad ideas sometimes.
I'm exactly the same. is it good?
And then I get turned off everything I've done as well if I'm on my own. Yeah. Just like it's all rubbish. Is it all amazing or all rubbish?
Exactly. Someone else can go, we're keeping that.
Yeah, that's what I need. Someone I respect that I can just cling on to.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think it's really good fun and I just think it's hilarious that we've both got this. We've had all these pairings, but then we're having this moment as well. And, you know, it's so funny. I've actually found it very comforting when I've been talking about Murder to know you're doing the same thing with Unwritten. Because firstly, I think it's like you get these sort of lightning strike moments, don't you, of like, I think what's happened to both our songs is quite extraordinary, actually.
It is. And it's beyond our control. It's not something we did, even though we did those songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But also...
Yeah.
I think it sounds like you were already on. I mean, I know as well. Look, it's obviously the song was in a film which has taken it the next level. But actually, last summer at Mighty Hoopla, the crowd you had singing to all your songs in the sunshine.
Oh, it was amazing. It was mind-blowing. Like,
so sensational.
I think it was like 30,000 people and they were all singing it. And I was so shocked because like my label sent me away to America and it was a hit in America, but I didn't think it was a hit in England.
What was it like when it was taking off in America? Was it exciting?
Yeah, but it was the slowest climb ever. It was like 6 months every day. It climbed every week. It climbed one spot, and then it stuck around. It's like
six
one of those
months.
Ones. Yeah, every day I was in a different state, different radio station. Like I just did it. I worked hard.
You did.
True to what my family say about me, but I did. I was like, I'm going to work
Let
hard.
Let it not be said.
Yeah,
I'm not afraid of hard
work. It's true. Because at that time, the labels were like, oh, Robbie Williams, he tried to do it, but he wasn't willing to go to the radio stations.
So you were like, the gauntlet.
I was like, okay, I can work hard. And so I just like, you know, literally sang to people who were eating pizza because the contest, like the radio gave them free pizza or something, you know.
Yeah, but I do
and then
think,
they played the song.
I do think that a graft has to come into it, actually,
it does.
Doesn't it?
Graft is such a good word, isn't it? I love that. Yeah.
It just has to, because ultimately there's billions of people out there doing the same things. So you just got to be like this uncomplaining little presence.
If you care
like,
about
I'll
it.
I'll do it.
Yeah. And I did learn to say no after a while.
That's a good thing, though.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Oh, well, I'm thrilled for you, Natasha. I think it's such a good thing, and I'm very happy that it meant we could meet up in person.
Me too.
And I think now we should just... We can run our careers again. Like we could just do whatever songs we both released after Unwritten and Murder.
Oh, the next one.
Song.
That's a good idea.
And then we can just take some time off.
Or we just
off.
Click reset.
Yeah, exactly.
Like we could write... another song. I think that would be fun. We could also, I would love to like do something like go like present an award at the Brits together or something like something fun like that.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
Or be on
it.
Your podcast.
Yeah. All of the above. And as I said, piano is waiting. If we the collab, both our songs combined, everybody be so happy. Like, what's next? Don't worry. It's kind of Murder Part Two. It's sort of Unwritten Part Two.
Murder in the Rain.
Exactly. It's waiting for us. Look at those lovely keys waiting for us.
Rain on the dance floor.
See? It's right in itself. Oh, thank you so much.
And I love you. I love your song. It's like when good things happen to good people. You're such a good person.
Well,
and you're so respected. Like anyone who talks about you, they've always had good things everywhere I've ever been. And so it makes me happy to see.
Yay. Well, I feel exactly the same thing. Exactly the same. And so much positivity around you as well. That's a nice thing. It was so nice to catch up with Natasha and have such a proper conversation about her really quite fascinating childhood and family dynamic. Because actually, come to think of it, I met Daniel Bedingfield before I met Natasha. We were signed to the same label. And we also did things like Top of the Pops together. I miss Top of the Pops. They should bring that back. Anyway, it was lovely to catch up with her and hear about her little boy Saul, and I'm so happy that he's all well after that terrifying brain abscess that I cannot imagine how scary that must have been. And I very much identify with that idea of keeping going with the work, even though you're kind of, everything is very close to the surface and all feels quite sort of surreal that you're going through something so dramatic when everybody just expects you to hop up and sing. I've definitely had similar experiences to that. Anyway, it was a complete joy to see her. And I think it was just really lovely. And I love, you know me, I love talking to other singers. There's actually another singer I'm hoping will be part of this series, just to leave a little dot, dot, dot there. But mainly, really happy to be back. Got lots of lovely people I'm speaking to. And hey, it's springtime, guys. And if you're listening to this in time, don't worry. If you get this like as soon as it's published on April the 8th, don't worry, you've still got time until April the 10th to sort my birthday present out. Birthdays are super important to me. I love a birthday. And that being said, it's not my birthday today. It's Richard's. I better go and see where he is and go and shower him with some birthday cheer. All right, I'm really happy to to be back with a new series. Thank you so much as ever for lending me your ears. And thanks to Richard and Claire and Ella May for making the podcast possible. Yeah, I really, really love it. It's funny, when I started, I thought maybe I'd do one series. And it's like, I'll do another, I'll do another. And now it's just very much part of my life. And as you know, an excuse to talk to some amazing people. Right, anywho, I'm going to go and get out into that Italian sunshine. I will see you soon. And yeah, lots of love. Have a wonderful week. See you soon.